You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. We are now only 9 days away. I can't believe it. Only 9 days away from the 2014 NFL Draft. Welcome, everyone, to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson, and joining us this week in studio, the illustrious man from DraftInsider.net, the one and only Tony Pauline.
Does anybody remember laughter?
Evidently, you guys remember laughter. But yes. That was great. I'm going to have to move down here now. You know, Bo didn't know what that was until the Senior Bowl.
That's
when
true.
I pulled it up on YouTube.
That's
and
not
had
true.
Show,
I like but, to I like to troll you about Led Zeppelin. There, I mean, Led Zeppelin is good.
I didn't know what it was.
I thought it was AC/DC.
But they're not like Led Zeppelin's no Boston. You know?
Led Zeppelin's good. That's like saying ice cream is mediocre. I mean, come on, man.
Well, it depends on the flavor.
Yeah. Was it Def Leppard? I wasn't quite sure who it was there.
Def Leppard is just Led Zeppelin kind of jumbled up letters there with bad music.
And minus one arm.
Come on, that's not nice.
Well, it's true.
That's not nice.
Tony.
Although it's not minus one drummer like Led Zeppelin. So.
That's true. The thing about that, the backstory behind that is that every time Tony gets in front of a mic, he does anybody remember laughter?
Just in warm-ups, though.
Just in warm-ups. Yes.
Although I'm sure Fran's got it somewhere in the archives that... have to pay him.
No, we actually haven't gotten it out yet. It's on the bloopers reel yet.
It's on the blooper reel.
It'll be there.
Yeah, it'll be there.
What does Robert Plant have over me except a lot of hair and a lot more women?
Not much. Yeah. Not your draft insight, say at least.
Absolutely not.
Definitely not that.
The wrong kind of football with Robert Plant.
Tony, you and I will be in Radio City Music Hall a week from Thursday, providing the coverage for Eagles Draft Live from Radio City. And what has it been like with the draft now 2 weeks later than previous years? Because usually at this time of year, it'd already be done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of sitting around trying to find things to do. I know the teams don't like it. I mean, as I've said in the past, I call it paralysis by overanalysis. That is really magnified this year. I think it was Bruce Arians put out a tweet just a couple of days ago. Someone told me, I didn't see it, but said something to the extent that they've watched these guys so much and there's so much more time, they're not going to like any of these guys. It's sort of like, you know, when you buy a car and you're not sure you want to buy a car, the more research you do it, the more you tend not to buy it. And I think that's what's going to happen with some of these players. There's going to be so much research and so many questions. You may get to the point where they may find things wrong in a guy's game that's not there and may kind of beg off some of these players.
Okay, so with me, as always, start with Bo Wolf over here. Bo is, for those of you watching the video version, sporting the retro throwback Wake Forest t-shirt.
I did it for Tony.
Showing the guns.
I did it for Tony. Tony is the world's biggest Tommy Bohannon fan. I lead the Campanero train, but Tony drives the Bohannon bus.
I like that defensive tackle this year, who's
Nikita Whitlock.
Yeah, who may go to fullback. He's a guy to watch.
I think the Patriots have been linked to him, right? He's a rich man's Dan Klecko.
A couple different teams.
Wait, what's the size of him? Isn't he only like 5'11"?
He's about 5'6", 280. Yeah. And just a ball of terror.
280 is generous. He's 250.
He's 5'11 and a half. But he plays like his hair is on fire, assuming he has hair. But he's one of those guys that is just a great college player that doesn't have measurables for the next level. So they're trying to find a place for him at the next level. I thought it'd be inside linebacker. They worked him out at fullback during his pro day workout. He did a great job catching the ball out of the backfield. So that looks like it's going to be his position at the next level, like you said, with Dan Klecko.
And he was like, you know, he was the leader of that defense. Yeah. He would, you know, play through all kinds of injuries and stuff. He was, one of the better players in recent history.
When you watch the film, you just see this small guy on the defensive line just running around the field making plays. You can't help but notice him.
Fran said the same thing, right?
No, he was a guy who, I remember I watched him in the fall, and it was, if you can name one guy that I've watched over the last few weeks that I do not want to run into a dark alley, it was Nikita Whitlock. Right. This kid was just, I remember watching the Maryland game, play one, he's jumping off and, you know, tackling Corey Brown in the backfield for TFL. So great talent, but like Tony said, the measurables just don't match up.
Fran Duffy's our producer and director for the Eagles Draft Live show, which will be taking place next week. Tony is one of our guest analysts. Fran, can you kind of preview for fans who have not watched the show in previous years, what they can expect, who else will be a part of the telecast?
I'm excited, man. It's going to be a great broadcast. I mean, from day one, obviously, as you alluded to, you and Tony will be up in Radio City. We'll have Dave Spadaro on the voice of the Philadelphia Eagles, Merrill Reese in studio. Greg Cosell from NFL Films will be in studio all 3 days of the draft with Bo on day one. We'll have Ike Reese, former Eagle, on day one of the draft. Day two, we'll have Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, Sirius XM Radio. He'll be in studio on day two. Tony will be joining us in studio on day three. Last year, I mean, we had great guests on the show. We had, you know, David Shaw, the head coach of Stanford. Bob Stoops, the head coach of Oklahoma, was on the show last year. All the Eagles draft picks will be on the show. Their coaches. It's a great show, and obviously it's something I put a lot of work into. So pretty excited for it to get going next week.
It's your baby. This is your baby.
Getting there.
So it's about time to deliver this baby,
right,
for crying,
exactly,
out loud.
Exactly. It's two weeks late.
Fran has about 750 babies. Every draft prospect is one of his babies.
362.
Tony, what is this time of the year like for yourself? Now, fans can follow you on Twitter at Tony Pauline. You're dropping tons of draft nuggets all over the place right now. What is this time of year like for you in terms of just trying to keep up on all the latest scoops, what teams are trying to put out there at the last minute?
It's not so much keeping up on the latest scoops. It's trying to decipher which scoops are real and which are just smoke, or which is, you know, just a lot of baloney, which, you know, and I was even doing on a train ride down here trying to get information. And you get information and you try and confirm it. You know, this player missed this fight. This player maybe has character issues. The reports are done. Obviously, there'll be some fine-tuning of the grading. It's just, you know, you want to see, obviously, which teams, who are the Eagles looking at, who are the Giants, Dallas Cowboys, etc. But when it comes to the news, you have to try and figure out to the best of your ability which is actually true and which is just somebody putting something out there.
You mentioned you're going to be tweaking the grades. Greg Cosell was a guest in the podcast last week, and he says he goes strictly by the tape. He doesn't talk to coaches. He's not a media person. He goes by what he sees on tape. How much do you factor what evaluators tell you, what you're hearing from the medical rechecks, all the other outside stuff that goes into draft day? How much do you factor that into your grades?
You have to factor it in slightly, especially the medical rechecks, things like that. Maybe some last-minute flags pop up. I'm sure we'll get into that later on. You can't, I mean, let's like a guy like Tom Savage, who I've had as a fifth or sixth round pick. All of a sudden, people are talking about Tom Savage, the quarterback from Pittsburgh, being a second or third round pick. I can't do that because I watched the film on Tom Savage. And I'm all of a sudden not going to rearrange my quarterback boards to make him the number three, the number four, the number five quarterback. It would be dishonest to myself. I mean, why watch the film anyway? So I would agree with Greg. I mean, you have to rely on what you see on film. You do have to, you know, take some outside influences or information into consideration. I found through the years of doing it, the worst thing you can do is go against your instincts because, you know, well, this guy says X player, Sharif Floyd last year is a perfect example. People were talking about him as a top five pick. I just didn't see it. Sure enough, it wasn't true. So you, like Greg said, or probably alluded to, you got to go based on what you see, assuming you're doing the homework. If you're doing the homework and you're looking at the film and you're watching the players, and you're watching them in depth, not just a play here or there or YouTube film or two or three games. You're watching them over the career. You've got to, you know, you got to go by that. You do have to take some outside influences because there's always more to learn.
Can we talk about Tom Savage? Because it's like the most perplexing thing to me. I know everybody thinks it's kind of silly, but it's borderline insane to me that he's being talked about as a late first round, early second round pick.
Right. Well, I mean, you got to look at the whole story with Tom Savage. Number one, when he was a redshirt freshman at Rutgers, he showed some real potential. He had the physical skills. He fell out with the coaching staff, transferred to Arizona. Rich Rodriguez goes to Arizona. The last type of quarterback that Rich Rodriguez wants is Tom Savage, so he transfers back to Pittsburgh. Now, you got to break him down. Pittsburgh, he struggled early in the season. He showed some good signs late. From a physical standpoint, Tom Savage is one of the better, say, arm talents in this draft. He definitely has the physical skills. When you watch him on film, though, I mean, his decision-making, his poise under the rush, his accuracy, his mechanics really leave a lot to be desired. Now, the pessimist, like myself, would say you don't draft a guy like that in the top three rounds. The optimist would say, well, look, he's got the skills, but he hasn't played a lot of football. You might as well take him in. You take him in the third round and develop him. The fact is Tom Savage is a project in the works. He is a guy that's going to need a lot of time. If you take him in the third round or if you take him in the fifth round, you have to understand that Tom Savage, in my mind, again, he's not a top 100 player. But if he goes in the top 100 and people are expecting him to see Tom Savage under center in 2014 as a productive quarterback, I think they're fooling themselves.
My two points on Tom Savage are, one, and I've mentioned this before on the podcast, if you're taking the guy who has the measurables and the arm to dream on, why is Tom Savage ahead of Logan Thomas?
That's it. I agree with you. And Logan Thomas is a leader. You know, you hear Logan Thomas talk, you see him interact. He is a leader. He had some issues at Virginia Tech with offensive coordinators. His play has regressed. I absolutely agree with you. In fact, Logan Thomas got better physical skills.
Right.
I guess you could say, well, Logan Thomas's poor play the past 2 years, it basically hurt him, where Savage hasn't played poorly in 2 years. But I absolutely agree with you.
And to that point, I think that Logan Thomas is probably going to get drafted higher than most people in the media think. I think, you know, there's only a handful. You can count on one hand the amount of quarterbacks that are in this draft that are big kids that have the frame that, you know, teams want, quote unquote. And then you have the guys who have the arm strength. And there's only, you know, you have Logan Thomas, you have Mettenberger, you have Tom Savage. After that, there's the big drop-off.
Well, the thing with Logan Thomas is it's justifiable if you take a third-round pick on Logan Thomas, because if you go back to his 2011 film, and I like to watch the guy's body of work, you go back to his 2011 film when he was a sophomore, he looked like he was going to be a franchise quarterback. He had that potential. He showed those flashes. He was tremendous. Just that the past 2 years, his game has fallen off. So I would argue, there's more justification for taking Logan Thomas in the top 100 as opposed to Tom Savage.
The other point is something that Greg Cosell has talked about. He talked about it with Aaron Murray and Teddy Bridgewater. Guys with that track, like with that size player, there's no real track record of success for quarterbacks in the NFL. Okay. Well, there's no real track record for one of these project big arm guys being taken in the second or third round. Who has succeeded like that?
No, absolutely. In fact, you look, I mean, the track record, everyone points to Tom Brady, but the track record of quarterbacks taken after round one is not that great overall. Granted, you know, you had Russell Wilson last year, but I mean, the Flaccos, more times than not, you know.
I guess Flacco is the best example, but he was a first-round pick.
He was a late first-round pick, exactly.
Now, on the flip side, what's going on with Teddy Bridgewater? Because while you see Savage going up boards, Bridgewater is a guy who's been tumbling down boards, it seems.
I think two things with Teddy Bridgewater. Number one, he did not have a great campaign in 2013. Statistically, you'll say, well, his numbers were better. But the fact is, when you watch Bridgewater on film, he just didn't show the same sort of confidence in 2013 as he did in 2012. It just wasn't there. Things seemed to click a lot easier and a lot quicker and a lot better for him in 2012 than it did in 2013. So he comes off of that. Then he goes to the combine. He doesn't do a thing at the combine. He said he was going to run the 40, but he didn't. The 40 time's not important, but if you say you're going to do something, you really should do it. He goes to his pro day. He runs the 40 once. Again, not that important, but if you're begging off, if you're not doing things like that, it shows a lack of competitiveness. And then his throwing workouts were just not good. You know, people sometimes put too much stock in great pro day workouts. That's understandable, but the fact is you're supposed to be good at pro day workouts. Teddy Bridgewater was not. He was inaccurate. He was making his receivers work hard to catch the ball. He was overthrowing guys. He had guys reaching and adjusting, and it's been like that during the individual workouts. And I go back to what I said about him during the 2013 season. It just seems like a lack of confidence. It's not a good situation, especially when you're talking about a quarterback or a guy you may draft as a quarterback for the future, which is why Bridgewater's falling.
It's going to be fascinating just to watch how this all plans out, not just on draft day, because, I mean, he could go third overall to Jacksonville and, you know, it's all's forgiven. The story starts from there. But if he goes in round two, what kind of situation he falls into, how that team uses him, it's going to be interesting to see how, at the end of the day, you know, 5 years down the line, where these quarterbacks all stack up together.
Go back to Tom Savage. You know, someone said to me, well, you're going to eat crow if Tom Savage is taken in the third round. I was like, well, draft day isn't the end of it. If Tom Savage is taken in the third round and never takes a snap in the NFL, I guess, you know, the detractors were correct, to your point.
And that's what it comes down to in the media, too. I mean, you look around. Are you trying to project who's going to go in the first round? Are you trying to get a correct 32 in your mock draft? Or are you trying to project on who is going to be a good player once they reach the league?
I think my pet peeve when you talk about the media is a lot of these guys in the media who are talking about.
You are in the media. You do know that, right?
Yeah, okay. Yes. Okay. Thank you. But my pet peeve, that doesn't mean I don't have a pet peeve.
Yeah, I know.
But what happens is, I got media pet peeves, too.
There you go. You get a lot of these guys who cover the NFL from June to the Super Bowl, and they do a very good job of it. And then all of a sudden, February 1st, February 2nd, they become draft experts, draft analysts, and they start, you know, and what they're talking about is not what they're seeing. Going back to what you asked me about Greg Cosell, they're not the guys who sit there and watch game film 11 months a year. They talk to this general manager, that general manager. They read this at a certain place, and then they formulate an opinion, which is why I think there's so much haphazardness. Why is Teddy Bridgewater falling? You know, why is this guy rising? What happened here? What happened there? They just don't have the foundation of the body of work for a player.
So what is your ranking of the top quarterbacks? Fran, Bridgewater is atop your list, correct?
Yeah, okay. Bridgewater is number one on my list.
It really hasn't changed that much. I mean, I still have Bortles number one, as I have since January. I still have Bridgewater number two, although he's falling primarily, and I have Derek Carr number three with Johnny Manziel number four.
Okay.
Because I'm not a big believer in Johnny Manziel. I think he was a great college quarterback. He was electrifying. He was a magician on the field. But as I've said a couple times, I think some of the things that he did that made him so successful in college is the way he played with reckless abandon, the way he just took chances could be to his detriment in the NFL.
Now, speaking of Johnny Manziel, Peter King put out the rumor that the Eagles might look to move up in the draft to select Manziel. And Chip Kelly at the annual playground build.
Hashtag Eagles build.
Very nice there. Was asked about Manziel. He recruited him while he was at Oregon. Obviously, he went to Texas A&M. Said that broke my heart. I love the kid. Hell of a football player. Do you think there's a chance that the Eagles, even with Nick Foles here entrenched as quarterback, could move up for Manziel?
I'd be shocked. I mean, why? They've got needs at other positions. They made the playoffs last year. They had a great year last year with Nick Foles. I mean, could they look for an upgraded quarterback? Yes. But is trading away draft picks to move up to get Johnny Manziel the answer? And my answer, I would say no. So I'd be very shocked at that. And I don't know where that information is coming from, because I've not heard that about the Eagles. I've heard a lot of receivers. I've heard about safeties. I've not heard that trading up. Unless somebody's just throwing something out there with the connection between Chip Kelly trying to recruit Johnny Manziel to University of Oregon.
I thought the key phrase in what Chip said at the playground build about Johnny was he was perfect for what we did at Oregon,
right,
which is not exactly what the Eagles are doing here. So, you know, if Chip wanted Johnny football for that system, he probably, and, you know, he didn't have Nick Foles. So I think that was the key phrase there.
Right. I think, as is the case with any player, and especially at the quarterback position, and especially with Johnny Manziel, it's going to come down to where he goes and what the fit is, how that team uses him, and that's going to determine what his success is ultimately in the NFL.
The problem with Manziel is, where does he fit?
Right.
Okay? I mean, Blake Bortles is a sort of a plug-and-play type of quarterback. You use him in any system. I think Bridgewater, you know, there are specific systems for him. Same thing with Derek Carr. I look at Manziel, and I see a guy that you may have to devise a system around him. I mean, you may have to change your system. You may have to be very flexible. And if it doesn't work out, you've set your franchise back 3 to 5 years. That's why I think that Manziel is a very risky pick. And that's why I would not put any credence into the fact that the Eagles are going to trade up to get a guy like Manziel. Maybe a guy like Mike Evans, but I don't think they have enough ammunition. But Manziel, I'd be very shocked.
Go ahead.
I always laugh when I hear that teams like Jacksonville and Cleveland need to take Manziel for the buzz factor so they can get fans excited. Winning gets fans excited. Right. But Johnny Manziel goes there and flames out. You know, ask Denver how they feel about Tim Tebow right now and that buzz factor. So it if he goes somewhere and he doesn't work out, then that buzz factor is gone.
I totally agree. And that, you know, that's the thing, that Tebow was always linked to Jacksonville. And you know, that's, it's going to be great. You sell tickets for two games and then you're going to stink.
I do think there'll be a short-term burst if the Houston Texans make the mistake and take him with the first pick of the draft.
Of course.
Just because he's a local guy. But like you said, I mean, there may be some short-term benefits, but long-term, it may not be a very good thing for your franchise.
My sense, and this is, you know, just projection, my sense is that Johnny Football is going to go to a team that has no other pieces on offense. A team like the Texans that has two good receivers, a good running back, I don't think they're going to take Johnny Manziel. I think, you know, not for the buzz, but I think the Jaguars make more sense because the way that he plays, you want him to sort of freelance and be sort of a cure-all for the offense and do things himself. And the Jaguars don't have many other pieces on offense, or the Browns have Josh Gordon. They've got more stuff going on. I think that Manziel ends up going to a team that needs a lot of help on offense and needs him to make plays on his own.
There's a belief that Manziel is going to be taken by a team with a defensive-minded head coach because he's going to be able to control them and
exactly.
He's going to be able to game. But the question is, if you're Gus Bradley and you got a quarterback like Johnny Manziel, I mean, do you really want that? Because you could be going crazy watching Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, but I mean, if your goal is to build up the defense and just sort of let him do his thing on offense, it sort of pairs okay.
Understand, but how long is that going to last in the NFL?
Well, of course. I mean, that's
very thin. You saw him get hurt in that, or if you watched the Auburn game, he got hurt. I mean, what's that? Because he was, you know, running around like a chicken with no head, and he got slammed. What's going to happen to the NFL? How long is that going to last? As I said in my report about him, a lot of the things that made him great in college, I think, are going to be to his detriment in the NFL. That's one of them.
Yeah.
Very, very fascinating. Now, Tony, we're going to get into our first game here on today's podcast. It's a game that we call They Are.
They Are Who We Thought They Were.
Thank you very much, Brian Thomas, our esteemed producer, where I drop clues about who a prospect is. You guys guess who it is, and then we'll explain why he's in the news. Now, all the players we're going to talk about here are guys that you have a little bit of detailed information on.
Uh-oh.
In the run-up to the draft.
Is there a prize for this game or no?
Yeah, we can come up with something.
Respect.
End,
yeah,
so.
A thermal.
Lord knows I need more of them.
Certainly. First one. First team All-American 2013. A finalist for the Biletnikoff Award, given to the best receiver in college football. He was a team captain, set the school record for receiving yards, led the Southeastern Conference.
Mike Evans.
Very good. Congratulations.
I'm not holding back this week after going down the last two. Yeah, so.
They are who we thought they were.
Tony, what's going on with Mike Evans?
Probably right now the fastest rising player on draft boards. A guy who, you know, we thought would maybe be a top 10 pick or a guy who would go around that number 10 spot has moved up. People were saying 7. I had put a couple of weeks ago that he was going to go top 10, but from a team that would maybe trade down to get him, like the St. Louis Rams, or trade up like the Philadelphia Eagles. The information that I've gotten in the past 3 days is that Evans is going to be a top 5 pick. The Oakland Raiders like him at number 5. It makes sense for the Oakland Raiders. They need a guy who is going to help them immediately. They need to win now, that whole coaching staff and that front office. Evans is a guy who adds immediate impact. I hear the Cleveland Browns really like him a lot.
Interesting.
They have him as one of the highest-rated players on their draft board. Not
Period.
The highest-rated receivers, highest-rated players.
That receiving core would be sick, him and Josh Gordon.
And it's just, you know, you said Josh Gordon. Would the Cleveland Browns take a receiver at number 4? Common sense tells you no, especially in a draft that's got –
If you're going to build that as the foundation of your offense.
But I'm hearing he could go – and I've heard it from several sources. It's not just one person. I've heard it from several sources that he could go number 4. 3 weeks ago, I reported and took a little heat from it that the difference or the spread in war rooms between Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans is not that great, and I think we're starting to see the fruition. Why is that? As someone said to me yesterday, you can't coach 6'6". You can't teach 6'6". And Mike Evans is a 6'6" receiver who plays like that. I mean, he's not a big plodding guy. He's not a guy that doesn't show much quickness, let's say like Kelvin Benjamin of Florida State. He's a guy who's fluid, who goes up, he wins out for those contested balls. Cody Latimer of Indiana is another guy that's moving up draft boards because he wins out, you know, for those contested boards. You know, how do you beat 6'1", 6'2" cornerbacks? You pair them up against receivers that are 6'6", and that's what Evans does. I've been of the mind, the opinion all along, that Mike Evans made Johnny Manziel a much better quarterback, because if you watch the game film, I mean, more times than not, Manziel would put that ball up for grabs, and Mike Evans would just get up in the crowd, go over everybody, and come down with that ball because he's tall, he's got a long reach, he's a reliable receiver, he's got very good hands. Yeah, he needs some polish on his route running. He's not the fastest guy in the world, although I think that 4.46 he ran at the combine kind of relieved some people who wanted to take him early. Evans is moving up there because he plays the position well, and he's just a physical freak. He's just got such a size advantage. It makes the quarterback's job a lot easier.
Can we talk about Latimer a little bit? Because he has been a guy reportedly linked to the Eagles, and you know, he wasn't in that elite group of receivers, it seemed like, in the beginning of the draft process. Right. Now he's being talked about as a potential first-round pick.
Well, I don't think I don't think he's elite. I mean, if he gets into the first round, it's probably going to be the late part. Maybe San Francisco, who's looking for a receiver, and Chip Kelly and the offensive coordinator were out there last week when Latimer worked out for teams. I mean, the quarterback play at Indiana wasn't that great, but if you watch it, it was Latimer. We talked about Nikita Whitlock before, about how he stood out on film. It's the same thing with Latimer. I mean, just massive amounts of yardage, 200-plus yard receiving games, constantly going up, winning out on the contested ball. He's long, he's lean, he's fluid. It's not just he's a big guy, but he's got a smoothness about him in his game, reliable hands, again, sort of like Mike Evans, when he ran under 4.5 at his pro day, I think that relieved a lot of concerns for people who were considering him, you know, in that category from maybe the 25th pick of the draft to the 45th pick of the draft. You know, again, how do you overcome tall cornerbacks? Well, you put bigger receivers out there, and you let them go up and get the ball. That's what Lattimore does so well. That's what Mike Evans does so well. That's why these guys are moving up draft boards.
He's becoming one of the chic picks now to go in that latter stage of round one in all these mock drafts. Do you think that's where he ends up ultimately?
No, I don't think so. I like to call them internet icons. So everyone kind of gravitates for it. I think it's going to be – I mean, San Francisco says they're going to be very aggressive. San Francisco, even Seattle, who lost Sidney Rice, I believe, would be a decent fit.
And Golden Tate.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, and Golden Tate.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. But I think San Francisco could be a consideration. I would be surprised if he's late first round because I think he's a reach there, and I think there'll be other players available in that area where teams will trade up or teams will select. All right. For the Sidney Rice correction.
All right. Our next prospect, and they are who we thought they were. Season was cut short due to a knee injury. Offensive line prospect?
Thomas from Clemson. No, that was
Spencer Long.
Come on. Oh, France! 2 for 2.
He's got the notes, that's why.
Yeah, exactly.
Tony, what's the latest on Spencer Long from Nebraska?
I hear the Eagles like him, amongst other things. Spencer Long had a knee injury, I believe, 6 games into the season. Very talented, probably the number one, or was at one point in time, the number one prospect from Nebraska. He's a mean guy who's not only good at the point of attack on the line of scrimmage, but can also get out to the second level and block in motion. He's ahead of schedule. He'll be ready for July camp, from what I'm understanding. It's not a real deep guard crop, and I think Spencer Long is basically benefiting from that and the fact that, you know, people go back and look at his junior film from 2012. They look at the first 6 games and where he was headed and the fact that, you know, the season was just interrupted by the knee injury. Again, I hear the Eagles do like him. I'm thinking more 4th and 5th round, but the third round would not be out of the question because he's a guy that when he's healthy, they feel he can start quickly at the next level. So a third-round pick, that's something to keep an eye on for Spencer Long.
Where is he at in his rehab right now, Tony?
I heard he's close to 100%. He's basically ready to do everything. Now, I don't know if that means full contact, but, I mean, when it comes down to minicamp, he's probably a guy that's going to be doing position drills, to be working out. But when they put the pads on and start doing hitting, he's probably going to step to the sidelines. I would expect him to be ready for full contact from what I heard as of yesterday. Once preseason camp starts in July.
All right, next prospect on our list, defensive back, faced Chip Kelly in college, father played in the NFL, says school record for most interceptions returned for a touchdown, back-to-back first team, all Pac-12 honors.
Ed Reynolds?
Very good.
Wow.
I was about to bust out a Zach Ertz connection there, but
nice.
Ed Reynolds. Right. Tony, what's the buzz surrounding Ed Reynolds leading up to the draft?
You know, one of the three safeties that I hear the Eagles like, he's more of a third, fourth round guy. I mean, he looks the part. He often plays to it. The good part about Ed Reynolds is he's a devastating run defender. He's fast in a straight line. He'll come up. He mixes it up. He's opportunistic. He's got terrific hands for the interception. You look at his sophomore year, I believe he had 5 picks that year. Works well with the cornerbacks. Terrific size, over 210 pounds. I believe he's 6'1 and change. Very much looks the part. The problem with his game, as far as I'm concerned, is he's not a true center fielder. He's not a guy that goes sideline to sideline, doesn't cover a lot of area. Minimal skills, if you want to. He's not the type of guy you're going to place over the slot receiver. But there's a lot to like about his game. I'm thinking, you know, third, fourth round area, which I think he's going to end up in. But from what I'm hearing, that's one of the guys that the Eagles like as a potential safety.
Who are the other ones?
Well, I'm going to be Hassan Clinton Dix of Alabama, who I refuse to call Ha-Ha. I'm not calling any grown man Ha-Ha.
Why? Because you don't remember laughter?
That's right. That's right. That guy's Hassan Clinton Dix, who's going to go in round one. One guy who I hear that they like on the last day of the draft is Dante Johnson of North Carolina, who can play corner or safety.
And who was reportedly in for a visit.
Yes.
And they had some success with the North Carolina State guy by the name of Earl Wolfe a year ago.
Yes.
Johnson's got terrific size. He struggles making, when he played cornerback, he struggles making plays with his back to the ball, which would basically think that he'd be better off facing the action inside at safety where he played last year at North Carolina State. 6'2 and change, 200 pounds, runs in the 4.4s. He's got the measurables. He's got the head on his shoulders. Just, I think, limited to certain schemes. But I think if he's there in the last day of the draft, you're looking for a safety, a guy that, you know, can be used in nickel and dime packages, play special teams.
Is he a reliable enough tackler?
I don't see a lot of missed tackles.
Okay.
I mean, you know, that's also sometimes coaching technique, and I don't see a lot of missed tackles where guys are going to pick up big yards running after the catch.
He did shut down Michael Campanaro.
Well, I was going to say, did he miss a lot of tackles in that Wake Forest game?
I don't know if he shut him down necessarily, but...
Now, the one game I know he had a good game, they played Vanderbilt in the bowl game 2012, and he actually had a really good game against Jordan Matthews. Yeah.
All right, our last prospect here played for Chip Kelly at Oregon. Also played for Jerry.
Taylor Hart.
Very good.
Tony.
We got to let our guests have one. So, and of course, these
Thank
are.
Thank you for letting me have that.
Not a problem, Tony.
Probably should have got all of them.
Member of the Hart Foundation.
There exactly. Tony, is there a chance that of the Oregon players coming out in this year's draft that he could be the one most likely to reunite with Chip Kelly?
It'd be intriguing, an intriguing coupling. I believe Hart was not only brought in as a visit for the Eagles, but I think he also worked out for the Eagles. And I know that I've been told that the Eagles are going to look for a defensive end in this draft. Now, you look at Taylor Hart, he's not a guy that wows you on film from a playmaking point of view, but he's a very smart, tough guy. He sets the edge. He stays with the gap assignments, that sort of things. So if you're looking for a guy in the fourth round who, you know, can come off the bench, be a rotational type of lineman, maybe develop into a starter, I think Taylor Hart is your guy. I do know that the Eagles like him. Just a matter of where he goes. I've heard second round. I think second round is a little bit early for him. I do know the Pittsburgh Steelers like him, and he'd be a natural fit in the Steelers system. So third, fourth round the area, Taylor Hart of Oregon. It's more than just an intriguing coupling because Chip Kelly coached him at Oregon. He's also a very good player. He's a terrific football player from a area of toughness, from being a smart intellectual type of guy, from someone who puts himself in the proper position to make plays on the ball and doesn't make a lot of mental mistakes. So if they go that route in that area, I think that's a good pick for them.
What was the injury that he had?
Had a foot injury. He had a stress fracture in his foot, which kept him out of the postseason. Ironically, I heard that the foot injury was the result of, during practice, the nose tackle, Wade Kelapili, another name I'm going to butcher, kept stepping on his foot during practice when they were running games and blitzes like that, and that's what led to the stress fracture. You're laughing.
That's funny.
You have a 330-pound man step on your foot every day.
Yeah, well, it's funny that he kept doing it. Like, learn.
That's what I had heard that back.
I'd be so mad.
Prior to the combine, and that kind of hurt his Taylor Hart's run-up and process, pre-draft process.
It's going to work out for whoever ends up with him because he's a really good player.
Terrific player. Again, you know, you're not getting a guy that's going to get double-digit sacks, but if you like, you know, they talk about setting the edge and gap assignments, that's your guy.
Now, Tony, is there as much uncertainty leading up to the top of this year's draft as compared to maybe back in 1995, especially when the Jets made a particular selection at tight end?
Wow. It's an angry man right there.
That's a very angry man, but it's a familiar sounding man.
Boomer can't throw the ball 10 yards, so what does it matter?
Wait. Brian, let me hear that again one more time.
You know, the thing is, he was right, though. Boomer can't throw the ball. I mean, they had no receivers. Kyle Brady turned out to be a joke of a pick for the New York Jets. So
they took him over Warren Sapp.
Give credit where, well, a lot of teams passed up on Warren Sapp.
I know, but,
so
the, but the,
I understand.
Know, the famous know. Clip is the Jets fans chanting for "We want Sapp, we want
well,
Sapp."
The receiver from UCLA, J.J. Stokes, was also a pick that a lot of, and J.J. Stokes never really panned out, right. But
that guy knew what he was talking about.
Well, yeah. You know, listen, that's what happens when you pick up former Philadelphia Eagles like Rich Kotite and put them in positions of power. You end up with situations like that. But, you know, uncertainty at the top of the draft, I think yes. I mean, I think you may not know until really next Thursday when we're down there in the floor of Radio City what's going to happen. I mean, I think depending on your point of view, you know, Houston is either in a great position or they're in a terrifying position, because you've got a player in Jadeveon Clowney who's got Hall of Fame type skill, Hall of Fame type. I mean, this guy is dynamite in every aspect. He is a game controlling, once in a lifetime defensive prospect when he puts his mind to it. So do you take Jadeveon Clowney despite the fact that you've got a terrific defensive front seven, or do you go elsewhere and then be known as the team that gave up on Jadeveon Clowney if he fulfills his potential? You pass up on the quarterback and pass up on Blake Bortles and maybe pass up on the next Ben Roethlisberger. I think it's a difficult position. I think what Houston would really like is that a very good package be offered to them so they could move down a few selections and then take Blake Bortles.
Now, let's start talking about what the Eagles might do, especially with that 22nd pick. And a lot of fans are wondering about wide receiver after DeSean Jackson was released earlier this offseason. And the team addressed it on Monday, saying that it was purely a football decision, that they're going in a different direction at the position. And a lot of people are automatically assuming that's going to be size, that they want a guy who's bigger than 5'10", 178. But Chip Kelly, who's been known for his big people beat up little people mantra, said that's not necessarily the case. We'll evaluate it at every different position. Shield Kapadia from Birds 24/7 put together his list of the top 10 receivers if he was thinking like he thinks the Eagles are going to think, if that makes any sense. And I'll run down the list. And it actually, his top 10 list compared to your top 10 overall list are very, very similar. But just get your take on some of the guys.
These are non-Campanera receivers.
Yes, the non-Campanera class.
We got to go to 30 to get to them, right?
Yes.
So number one, he has Sammy Watkins. Number two is Mike Evans. Number three, Marquise Lee of USC. Number four from LSU, ODB, Odell Beckham. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all,
shimmy, yam, shimmy, yeah. Give me the mic so I can take it away.
Only 1 week before the draft. We got to get it in at some point.
Yes.
I'm so excited. Even if he goes, I don't care where he goes, we have to keep talking about him throughout throughout the season.
Number five, Brandon Cooks from Oregon State. Six, Kelvin Benjamin. Number seven, Cody Latimer. Jordan Matthews at number eight. Dante Moncrief at number nine from Ole Miss, and Allen Robinson from Penn State comes in at number 10 on Shields' list. Now, the only differences between his list and your overall top 10 receiver list, you have Paul Robinson of Colorado at number seven.
Richardson.
Paul Richardson, my fault on that. Allen Robinson at number eight, and then Davante Adams, number 10 from Fresno State. So just overall, your take on if the Eagles were to go receiver at number 22, who do you think the targets would be?
Well, a couple things. Number one, Chip Kelly, when he came here, he liked speed. I mean, he wanted a fast, more up-tempo game. DeSean Jackson was a fast receiver. You've got to replace that speed, which leads me to believe that, you know, Brandon Cooks would be, or even Odell Beckham, and that would make Bo really happy.
Yes, for sure.
That song, whatever it was. Brandon Cooks, I think, would be a terrific player. I mean, he's fast, he's explosive. Yes, he's under 5'10", but he plays big. He's not afraid to get up and fight for the ball. Odell Beckham is sort of a guy that gets short arms on occasion. He's a little bit faster than Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks plays big, he's tough. He can help you as a receiver, return specialist, running reverses. I mean, that's got to be a guy to consider, absolutely. Marquise Lee doesn't have that speed.
Marquise,
thank you.
Marquise the hard
Lee. S. There you go. At least not the tight end from Baylor.
Navajo.
Jordan Navajo.
But what Lee brings is the ability to pick up big yardage running after the catch. You mentioned Paul Richardson there, a guy who's a favorite of mine, someone who I think is going to be underdrafted. I think Paul Richardson is top 45 potential. He's probably not going to go to the late part of round two, early part of round three, but he's a field stretcher. He's an accomplished receiver with reliable hands that will have defensive backs, you know, playing back on their heels. I think more than just replacing a receiver, they want to replace some of the speed that they lost at the position.
I think if the Eagles draft Odell Beckham Jr., the Philly photo op should not be at one of the cheesesteak places. It should be at the Grays Ferry McDonald's, where ODB was arrested in Philadelphia.
Would you be happier
in the drive-thru?
Would you be happier with Odell Beckham in round one or Michael Campanaro in round three? If you could pick between
round
the two,
why can't he have both?
Yeah.
He wants round three.
Round three to the third day, or what?
That's a really tough question. I would say both.
Yeah. Your take, Fran, on the receiver. I know it's been a topic we've been rehashing on the podcast each and every week, but is there any more clarity in your estimation, especially with the buzz that's surrounding Cody Latimer all of a sudden the last couple of weeks, that you know maybe one guy might emerge as a better fit?
I think the buzz on Cody Latimer is just you know people in the media catching up to a guy who hasn't been able to take part in the postseason process because he's rehabbing an injury. Obviously played at a school that didn't get a lot of primetime action in Indiana. Obviously a really talented guy, and the one trait that stood out to me, as Tony brought up, was his ability in contested situations. So obviously Latimer's a talent, but are you taking Cody Latimer over Odell Beckham? Are you taking him over Devontae Adams or Moncrief? You know, that I don't know. What is going on over here now?
We're having a wardrobe change.
Yeah, wardrobe change in the middle of the podcast. It's
classing it up with the collar.
Seriously.
Tony was making me feel bad. I've never seen him so dressed up.
Oh, come on. You know, it depends on what type of receiver the Eagles want. You know, you went down that list and you had, you know, the guys like Evans, Allen Robinson, Dante Moncrief. You know, your big body, Cody Latimer, your big bodied, more quote unquote possession receivers. Then you got Brandon Cooks. You got Odell Beckham, who Paul Richardson on my list. Those are your vertical receivers. So, you know, what type of receiver do they want? You know, what type of receiver is a good fit? Granted, they, you know, you can always plug a guy like Latimer, a guy like Mike Evans, even a guy like Allen Robinson in. I think it's what type of receiver are you looking for is the best fit for your offense?
My biggest question that we haven't really discussed on our podcast is, what if the Eagles move down? We've talked about them moving up. What if they move down to, you know, you talked about the Niners having a lot of ammo to move up. What if they move down to 30 and maybe look at Latimer there?
Look at Latimer, or maybe Marquise Lee. You know, I said it with the hard S.
There you go. Yes.
Marquise Lee.
I mean, said it, ladies and gentlemen. Finally.
He's a guy that has, you know, fallen down draft boards, or I don't want to say fallen down draft boards. It's not projected to go as high as he was, say, 3 months ago. Didn't run well at the combine. There's some questions surrounding his knee. But if they could move down and get a guy like like Marquise Lee, I mean, that's a terrific pickup for them.
And plus they would get more picks, because right now they have 6.
Right.
So obviously I'm sure Harry Rosen wants to go into this draft, especially with all that value in the middle of rounds, wants to get some more picks.
And
there,
that's been their history. I mean, their history has been, you know, previous that they've acquired a lot of picks. And for the most part, they did a good job using the picks. Trading up to get Fletcher Cox. They gave away a few selections there. But for the most part, they worked the draft very well, the Eagles.
Are there any other teams besides the Niners who you hear maybe interested in moving up?
I know the Rams want to move down. The Ravens could make a move because the Ravens want a receiver. So if the receivers, there's a run on receivers early, they could move up. The hot name that everyone wanted to move up for was Mike Evans in the beginning of April. That seems out of reach right now. I have not heard of any other teams. I'm sure, you know, if the tackles start to fall, even if the quarterbacks start to fall, you may see some of those teams early in round two get itchy fingers and say, we better move up to get Teddy Bridgewater. We better move up, you know, to secure Derek Carr, like the Ravens did with Joe Flacco, which was a mild surprise at the time.
Let's go into some possible non-receiver positions. Yeah. The Eagles could address at number 22. And one that's connected to the Eagles in a lot of mock drafts is cornerback. And I'll throw out a couple names in particular. You have Virginia Tech, Kyle Fuller, Bradley Roby from Ohio State, Darquez Dennard from Michigan State. A, will those three guys be there with all the talk that Justin Gilbert will get picked pretty high and then the other guys might fall? And which one do you think the Eagles might have interest in at 22?
I would be surprised if Darquez Dennard is still there. I mean, okay, the Jets may take him. There's usually a run on cornerbacks because cornerback is a priority position on draft day. And the cornerback class is not very deep. And from what I'm hearing, these guys could go earlier than expected. So if Dennard's there, obviously that's got to be a consideration. Kyle Fuller, to my mind, entering the process, was one of the most underrated cornerbacks in the nation. It's good to see that he's getting, you know, what he deserves. He's a shutdown guy. He's consistent against the pass. He's good against the run. You know, he lays it on the line. Doesn't have great upside, but he's very consistent, and he is what he is. Bradley Roby, it depends on what Bradley Roby you're getting. I mean, if you're getting the Bradley Roby after the 2012 season, if Bradley Roby of Ohio State enters the 2013 draft, he's potentially the first cornerback selected before D. Milliner. He's probably wearing a Cleveland Browns uniform right now. He decided to go
back. Lucky him.
Yeah, well, it was a last-minute decision by him. He decided that he just personally and mentally wasn't ready for the next level. He goes back. He was awful last year. I mean, he was just not good. You look at the game against Wisconsin, Jared Abadaris beat him like a drum. It was unbelievable. Then he goes into the postseason process. He's got the size. He's got the speed. He shows the skills. And now he's had the recent off-the-field issue, which isn't major, but it still doesn't bode well for him. I mean, personally, from where I sit, I think Roby to the Eagles is a bit early. I would rather see him as a late first, early second round pick. But if you get a guy like that and you get him back to where he was in 2012 and you build upon that, you got a dynamite starting cornerback for years to come.
Another position, we'll go to linebacker. And this guy's been linked to the Eagles in mock drafts of late. Greg Cosell said that he doesn't expect him to be there at 22. He's a top 10 prospect, and it's C.J. Mosley from Alabama.
What I'm hearing about Mosley, and I would agree, I think Mosley's being undervalued right now. You know, he doesn't have the flash of Khalil Mack. He doesn't have the dynamite pass rushing skills of Anthony Barr. He's not a forceful guy, but what he is he's a three-down defender. He's very good against the run. He's terrific against the pass. Third and five situations, you're going to leave him on the field. He's going to remain. He stays disciplined with his assignments. He can do a variety of things. I'm hearing lately that C.J. Mosley's got some red flag issues medically. Which is not uncommon with Alabama players. You know, you go through the history, Jesse Williams last year, Chapman, the defensive lineman. You had the center last year who hasn't been – because these guys come out –
Lachos Nachos.
There you go.
Kwanjo this year.
These guys come out, and they're just beaten up. And I've heard that there are some medical red flag issues with Mosley. Now, if he's there for the Eagles, and I would agree with Greg, I mean, I have him as a top 15 prospect. He should be. I don't know if he's going to be, but everyone looks for those highlight reel films, but when you really watch the film, I mean, Mosley does not make mental mistakes. He's in the right place at the right time against the pass and run. That has to be a consideration just from a value point of view.
I got an off-topic question for you here as you talk about watching film. When you watch Alabama, for instance, do you watch one play over and over again and go through each player on the defense, or do you say, all right, I'm watching C.J. Mosley this game, and then later you go back to the same game and you say, all right, I'm going to watch Adrian Hubbard this game, and you just watch the one player per game?
No, if you do that, the process would take forever, I mean, especially with a team like Alabama. When you consider all teams. No, I mean, I will just watch them, take notes as I'm watching it. If there's a play or two that needs to be reviewed because maybe two or three players made good plays or bonehead plays on that play that you need to take note of, you'll just, click the rewind button and watch that play again. But no, I'll basically run through the tape.
That's why it takes Fran so long.
It depends. I mean, if you're using the VCR and you got the that push button.
Do you have to get up off the couch and press forward, rewind?
I'm not lazy. I got two good legs and they work. Isn't that why America is so fat? Because didn't they say because of the remote controls in the old days, people used to have to get up and turn the stations and the lack of exercise?
That must be it. Solved it.
Exactly. There we go. Epidemic solved.
Well, and the reason I ask is because Fran does it one way, Greg Cosell does it the other way, where he watches one play over and over again, goes like by each player. So it's interesting to hear how people do it.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
I don't know how many. We have at draftinsider.net, there were 770 scouting reports. Okay, so, Greg may be able to talk more in depth about C.J. Mosley. But I can tell you about the linebacker from Alabama A&M or the receiver from Alcorn State.
That's why we got you coming day three, buddy.
So that's
or the long snapper from Florida A&M.
Long snapper is the one position I just beg off.
Long snappers are people too.
I know, okay, just like the punters and kickers. Right. I got them up for you.
So. Thank you.
But Dennis Kelly's perfect.
Who's the highest rated kicker in the draft?
I don't even know. One of the punters is actually the highest rated. You got me on that one. I got to go to the site and check it out.
Okay.
But they're all like sixth, seventh round picks. It's not like the kid from Cal a couple of years ago was taken in the second round by the Jaguars.
Yeah, banger. Brian Anger. Third round, I thought it was.
Third round, whatever.
Over Russell Wilson.
Yeah. I just remember at the Shrine game, the kickers and punters were terrible this year. Do you remember that, Ren?
The kid from
Cal.
They
were just like awful.
The kid from Cal made his money at the Shrine game. He was booting it to the moon. Everybody was like, go back to Nikita Whitlock. You watch him on film. Everybody was – no one pays attention to the punters at these all-star games. All of a sudden, the guy from Cal is kicking them. And, you're like 100 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi. And the ball's still hanging up there. That's why he went as early as he did.
Well, maybe it's just because we got a really good look at the special teams at the Shrine game.
Yeah. The practice was all special teams. So he had plenty of time to actually kick the ball.
There you go. Those were some fun practices.
Those were the days.
That was this year, though.
Can we joke on the practice?
I'm never
going back to
the Shrine game again, ever.
Well, no, the Shrine game is good. It's a beautiful place.
The practices, I should
say. Usually got nice weather. I mean, why wouldn't you want to go there? Granted, if Romeo Crennel's there, you just don't go to the practice. So you get to the practice an hour and a half into it, and,
Right.
Then you only have two special teams in a stretch period.
There you go.
All right, I'm going to throw at you a seven-round fan mock draft that Tommy Lawler, our Fandemonium columnist, did.
Big Zeppelin fan.
And kind of, you know, ask you what you think of that value and some guys we've already discussed, and then maybe other possible targets for the Eagles in these rounds. Okay. Now, we've already delved into Kyle Fuller, first round number 22. You'd be a big fan of that pick there.
I like Kyle Fuller. It depends on who else is available on the board, but it wouldn't be a reach. Let's put it that way.
Jordan Matthews in the second round, so it'd be the 54th pick for the Eagles.
I like Jordan Matthews more as a third rounder. I think Jordan Matthews has really had a tough postseason. He was not very good at the Senior Bowl, dropped a lot of catches. Same thing at the Combine. Granted, you can't just throw away years of terrific game film based on some workouts and practices.
Teddy Bridgewater.
But it's a quarterback position. It's quarterback.
That's true.
The other thing is this is, what other receivers are available? Because it's such, you know, if the receiver draft was like the pass rusher class, like we just talked about, I would say, yeah, Jordan Matthews in round two is good. But, I mean, you're going to have good receivers through the fourth round. I would beg off that. I think he's a third round pick.
If you don't mind me changing up this segment a little bit, Jimmy Kemsky released his seven-round mock draft yesterday, so we can maybe compare and see which ones we like. Oh, you're going to go one and then the other.
I was going to focus more on Laws, but I can work in Kemsky's as well.
Well, I was just going to say because he has Fuller in the first round too, so that we move on from there. And then the second round.
I'll mix it in. So now Jimmy Kemsky from Philly.com goes Troy Nicholas of Notre Dame in the second round.
Why? They drafted Zach Ertz last year in the second round. I don't know that.
There's one thing we know about Tony. He doesn't like six tight ends on the field. Yes.
As you've heard. I don't think it's a need. And the fact is this is, I wanted to touch on this. I mean, two of your top rated tight ends, Austin Seferian Jenkins and Troy Nicholas, will have not worked out for scouts prior to the draft. Seferian Jenkins had, as we reported, we were there, had the stress fracture in his foot.
You broke
and Nicholas has got the sports hernia. So, I mean, Nicholas in round two makes sense for a tight end needy team. I don't know that the Eagles are a tight end needy team.
But what if you're going best player available? Right.
Well, again.
Because maybe it's not a need today, but in a year, 2 years, injuries, things can change. You don't want to say that you pass up on a guy like him just because you need somewhere else.
Well, two things. Number one, I want to be redundant. You got to see who else is available on the board. The other thing is, with best player available is good in theory, but you have to find some happy medium between best player available and filling a need. You know, you don't want to fill a need with an inferior player who's maybe 10 or 15 spots down on your draft board. But if you you just take best player available, you could end up with six good tight ends on your roster, as we heard in 1995.
Yes.
There's got to be some happy medium. As much as I say, I think Fuller in round one's okay, Nicholas doesn't really appeal to me.
I also think it's kind of weird to factor in best player available into a mock draft just because you're not factoring in who else is available. And you're going, if you're doing a mock draft, you're doing it off need.
Right. Certainly. It makes sense to do it, by the first round. But when you're doing a seven-round team mock draft, it's impossible
Third round, we talked about the outside linebacker from Louisville, Marcus Smith, already. So you think he'll be up earlier than third round.
Great value if the Eagles, and fills a need, too. So it's good on both parts.
For Jimmy, this is a Fran Duffy favorite, Bruce Ellington, South Carolina. Oh, got a little rise out of you there. So
I love Ellington. I think he's one of these guys that's probably the quintessential slot receiver. Former basketball player, knows how to go up and attack the football, even though he's a smaller guy. Really quick, has some speed, really good hands, just a good blocker, aggressive kid. A guy I really, really liked when I watched him on tape, and I was late watching him, too. I think I watched him right before the combine.
Brings some return skills, but the thing is there's no great physical characteristic to his game. The other thing is this, Steve Spurrier receivers don't have a good history in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, that system, and I remember going to scout games in person with Anthony Riddell and Ike Hilliard and all them, and it's the receivers who, really made that system. They just don't have a good history, so you got to be careful.
All right. In the fourth round, it's a guy that we've talked about on the program with you in particular before. Tommy Lawler goes with Brent Urban, the Canadian from Virginia.
I may be in the minority, but I think that's tremendous value for Brent Urban because he played with a bad ankle last year, played a little bit at the Senior Bowl. The ankle flared up. He's another guy that's not going to run for scouts prior to the combine. Had minor ankle surgery to repair the ligament damage from what I was told. But the fact is this, you get him in the fourth round, he's a good player now with potential greatness down the road. I mean, he's big, he's fast, he's explosive, he's intense, he can rush the passer. It's just he has to get a little bit basically physically mature and learn the game. If I'm an Eagles fan and they come away with Brent Urban in round four, I'm doing backflips.
We talked about Tommy's mock before, but I would be absolutely thrilled with Brent Urban in the fourth round.
Yeah, great potential, obviously. I mean, and the game I pointed to last week was against Oregon last year, where he really, really stood out in that game, and that was before the injury.
Tony will be here for day three on Eagles Draft Live, so if they do get him in day three, we can have Tony doing backflips.
We'll have to call Tommy and get him on the phone.
Certainly that would be the case. In the fourth round of Jimmy Kemsky's mock, Eagles go Ronald Powell from Florida, outside linebacker.
Yeah, that's early, though. I like Powell. The problem with Powell is he's got a very long medical history. So long that it's probably going to push him into the fifth, sixth, seventh round. Now, if you're a film guy, you know, you go by just on film, you watch Ronald Powell, there are a lot of things to like about his game. I mean, he's a defensive end who projects to outside linebacker, who Florida occasionally used off the line of scrimmage, who showed good range, the ability to make plays sideline to sideline. He's not just like an up-the-field guy like D. Ford of Auburn, mm-hmm. who everyone seems to love. I mean, makes plays off the line of scrimmage. This is where we talked about earlier in the show about outside influences. I mean, he's got a very long medical history, which I think is going to suppress his draft grade. From a view, yes, but from the fact that the medical history, I think he's a fifth-round pick.
In a class that's somewhat thin at pass rusher, he's a guy who could stand out just because of that natural ability. Obviously, he was the number one recruit coming out of high school, has plenty of ability, showed the ability, as Tony said, to play in coverage, rush the passer, play sideline to sideline. Ton of ability. It'll be how early are you willing to take that risk with a guy like that.
In Tommy's mock in the fifth round, the Eagles go with Darquez Dennard's teammate, safety Isaiah Lewis.
Has had an up and down career. He's a little bit small, a little bit short for safety. Has shown flashes more than consistency. Struggled at the Senior Bowl. Prior to the Senior Bowl, he was rising up draft boards where people thought he was going to be a late pick in the second day of draft, the third round area. Did not have a great combine. Fifth round's not a bad area. I mean, you're going to roll the dice. Best case scenario, he's your nickel back and special teams player. Worst case scenario, you're cutting a fifth round pick. So that's not and it fills a need at safety. It fills a need at safety. So I think it's a solid selection. I rate him as a sixth or seventh round pick, but we're talking about the fifth round here.
Our friend Jimmy goes with another medical concern in Brandon Thomas of Clemson, projected to be early second day pick. Was doing a private workout for the Saints, tore his ACL. So how far down will he fall?
I do backflips
all day
for this one.
Yep, yeah, me too.
Absolutely. I mean, if you draft Brandon Thomas, you have to realize that he may have to redshirt in 2014. Now, from what I heard, he'll be ready for practice October 1st. I reported that the other day. Doesn't mean he's ready for practice for October 1st. That means he's probably going to be ready to play November 1st. That's the middle part of the season. That's a terrific pick, especially for the Eagle system. I mean, you can use him in motion. You can use him on the second level. He's a guy who can play left tackle. He can play guard. I mean, he can play multiple positions on the offensive line. That's a good pick if he's there for the Eagles.
He's a guy who I kind of think of in the same light as Aaron Colvin, where you're going to draft him in the fifth round, sixth round, fourth round, but next year he's a second-round value. So in essence, you're trading a fifth-round pick this year for potentially a second-round pick in the future, and you're getting that talent in 2015.
Go ahead.
I think he's a better football player than Alan Colvin.
I would agree.
Colvin's a very good athlete, but he can't make plays with his back to the ball. Is he a cornerback? Is he a safety? You know, he blows assignments. Brandon Thomas doesn't have the measurables. I mean, he doesn't have the size. He's not a great athlete, but he's a terrific football player who consistently in the postseason at the Senior Bowl, the Combine, after a terrific career. I mean, you go back and you watch Brandon Thomas as a redshirt sophomore. He was a dynamite guard. He had a very good career at Clemson, and then he answered all the questions they had about him in the postseason. So.
And then there's also the idea that you know, an ACL is less devastating for an offensive lineman than it is for a cornerback.
Sure.
And the Eagles have taken these guys in the past. You look at Cornelius Ingram and Jack Akiguanu. Those may not have worked out so well, but I think it's going to be fascinating to see if the Eagles do take a Brandon Thomas or an Aaron Colvin or another guy coming off an injury, because maybe it tells you that they have so much faith, you know, the sports science stuff, mm-hmm. that they think that they can get these guys, they'll have a better handle on getting them to the next level, you know, getting them back to 100% than certain other teams. I mean, I could see the Eagles maybe taking Brandon Thomas in the fourth round. Would it be shocking if they took him in the third round?
I wouldn't be upset if they took him in round three.
Yeah.
And that's how I know that I disagree with a lot of people in terms of Aaron Colvin. Just not, you know, I can think of one play off the top of my head against Texas Tech where he made one of the best interceptions next to maybe Shaq Richardson against Oregon this past year. But the play that he made against Texas Tech was one of the best plays I watched in college football last year. a guy who I think is a better player than Justin Gilbert, and Gilbert's being talked about in the top 12,
right?
Potentially. I know some people are saying that, you know, he could fall, but Colvin to me is a great, great player.
I just think there's more guesswork with an ACL for a cornerback than,
sure, no
than
question, an offensive line. Absolutely.
I just, well, over the years, I think Colvin struggles making plays with back to ball. Getting back to Brandon Thomas, sort of a side note, is I think there's going to be a lot of pushback on what happened with Brandon Thomas, and I reported this earlier in the week, because Brandon Thomas goes for the workout. He's hurt in a non-contact drill. His draft stock is going to be depressed two rounds, and there's no compensation for him. There's no sort of disability, no sort of anything for him.
He had his own insurance, from what I've read.
Health insurance.
Health insurance, yeah.
His own health insurance. Didn't have any sort of income replacement insurance, no, or anything that's going to replace the loss of value. So, and I've heard it from a couple of people that said, you know, next year we're going to pick and choose, you know, because there are some teams out there, like the New England Patriots, who go around and they work out everybody. They'll work out 300 guys, but they got eight picks. So you're going to see, I think, teams say, listen, we know you're not going to take us, so we're not going to work out for you, unless there's some sort of, well, if we get injured. And injuries are infrequent. I mean, it doesn't happen all the time. I remember one at the combine, forget the Florida State receiver, I was talking to somebody about it, just had a devastating injury. They're not that frequent. But with a guy like Brandon Thomas, who is projected as a potential top 45 pick, it's going to send some waves through the business.
Well, it's like, why? How could you possibly blame Clowney for coming out and saying that he's not going to work out for teams anymore? After, you know, after he worked out at the combine, after he worked out at his pro day, I mean, but what else do you need to see from
the
guy?
You got the film study.
Right.
What else?
So, I mean,
do you need to do?
Worked out incredibly well. Looked really good. So you know, I mean, what happens is during the individual, more team specific stuff. I mean, they're doing generalities, and then they're asking, okay, well, linebacker, we're going to have you do this, that. So you're doing more team-specific things, so I understand the need for it. I also understand if you're Brandon Thomas and you're adhering to what a team wants and you're doing what a team wants and you have a freak injury, everybody kind of shrugs their shoulders and says, oh, well, sorry about that.
And the connection here is Brandon Thomas did a better job on Clowney than anybody this year, right?
At times. Although he picked him up and basically drove back into the corner. Everyone's like, oh, he did a great job. I'm watching the film. I'm like, whoa, what happened here?
And the last pick, Tommy Lawlor goes with Trey Hopkins, offensive lineman out of Texas.
You know, I like Hopkins. He's a left tackle, college left tackle, who I project to guard. I think he's a bit underrated. He's got the skills. He's a developmental guy. I think he's a guy that Hopkins would be a legitimate backup swing tackle. I mean, that's all you're looking for at that position, at that spot in the draft, I should say.
Jimmy Kempsey goes with a freakish receiver out of the same college as one Todd Harriman's, Saginaw Valley State, and that's receiver Jeff Janis.
Looks the part, doesn't always play to it. I mean, he is a guy that riles you on at times, and other times you're scratching your head wondering what's going on. He's a physical freak, there's no doubt about it. His hands are a bit suspect at times, he's a little bit unpolished. He did not go to the Senior Bowl and really impress people, which is what a small school guy like that has to do. But again, you know, you're looking at Jeff Janis in the seventh round, assuming that hypothetical comes true. You're looking at a guy who, if he doesn't make your roster, you're going to stash him on the practice squad and keep him around for a little while and try and develop those physical skills into football abilities.
Tony, great stuff. Thank you so much for the time. Now, next week, the draft will be right upon us. What we'll do for our Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA is do a mock draft for the show. I'm very much looking forward to it. I don't know if we've quite gotten the particulars of, are we going to divvy up the picks?
I've got the particulars already sorted out. I'm on top of it.
Fran's on top.
We're going to be, you know, we're going to be calling some people who are plugged in with certain teams and going through the picks, and then we'll get to 22.
So can't wait for
maybe
it.
Maybe we'll trade down to 32 just so we can do all 32
teams. Just do all
teams.
The picks.
My plan is to do all 32, so okay. we'll storm it out.
Fantastic.
Bo and I could leave, and Fran will just want go ahead and finish it anyway.
Just
want to
say that I did correctly project the Rams trading up for Tavon Austin last year, so my mock draft record is pretty sterling.
That was easy, though.
You didn't do it.
I did on Buffalo Bills radio that day and said that the Bills were going to take EJ Manuel, if you would like to Google it.
We shall. Now, do you do a different pick for every radio interview? So yeah. Somewhere you have it right, so...
No, I mean, when they ask me, I've got to blurt something out. I had the information on EJ Manuel to the Bills, and I didn't think they were going to take him at 8. I mean, you knew the Rams wanted him. Not just Rams want to trade down this year, so we'll see what happens.
All right, so for Tony, for Bo, for Fran, I'm Chris McPherson. Thank you very much for joining us once again on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.